Right, good evening everyone. So today's topic is life isn't always full of happiness. Do you agree? You agree? Why? Why do you think that life is not full of happiness? It's not always full of happiness.
Because there's sadness.
Because there's sadness? Why do you feel sad? Is life full of happiness? Maybe ask the young boy. Do you think life is always full of happiness? No. Why?
Bad things happen.
What kind of bad things can happen to you?
Can't play computer games.
Have to do homework. What about others? Do you think life is not always full of happiness? What are the things that make you unhappy?
Things that are out of your control.
Things that are out of our control. Okay, very good. So we do feel that life is not always full of happiness, is it? You think so?
Yeah.
So, what are the situation when you feel that life is not that happy at all?
When things don't go the way you hope they would.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Things doesn't go according to your will or the way that you want it to be. Anyone else have anything to add in? Yes.
It's also because you don't really know, even. What happens to us is bad. We don't know whether it will be benefit us in any kind of way.
Yeah, so we do not know how is it going to turn out to be. Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Bad things are always purely bad.
Yeah. And good things, not necessarily good. But then we judge it as good or bad. But then the outcome may not necessarily be so. So we are uncertain. The sense of uncertainty on how is it going to be can become a kind of suffering, and that's actually one of the factors that give us a lot of stress, that you are asked to make a lot of decision in life. You're now at a university, maybe a bit less those very challenging decision, but still times when it comes you want to choose subjects or plan for your timetable and things like that. Some students I can see that they got headache for a few days, especially come to elective subjects. Core subjects you got no choice, but elective subjects you find that some decided to take this or that. Or when you are in high school, year 11 students, year 10, or you got subject selection, headache as well, isn't it? You got have subject selection. Are you year 10 or year 9? Have you talked about subject selection? Have you decided what to take? Still thinking? Yeah. So that thinking process, is this the right choice or the wrong choice? What is it going to lead to be to the future? A lot of question. Career after HSC, you put in your preferences. Oh, that's a difficult one as well. But you do not know exactly what you want and what the outcome will be. So that sense of uncertainty. Of course, part of this sense of uncertainty comes from our lack of confidence, that we do not know what's going to happen in the future. Okay, so what? All of you agree that the life isn't always happy? Anyone object? No? Okay. So, as from what you all have said just then, some say things are just beyond our control. We do not know how is it going to turn out to be. We like things to be in certain way, but things turn out to be another way. Bad things happen. You hope that things go on smoothly, happy, but then, say for example, you organize a party at Centennial Park and it pours, raining. not during our Amazing Race. Yeah. So things that happen beyond expectation, and things that make you feel suffer. So those situations make you unhappy. And even if you have happy time, you find that it doesn't last forever. You like to be with your friends, you like to play games all the time, but you have to stop. Is that right? Do you sometimes stop by yourself? Like you play until you feel very tired and you stop by yourself, happily stop. Yeah? So, yes, there are times that happiness, there are happiness, but then it doesn't last forever. And also their happiness, well, we are happy, but after that enjoyable time, you feel exhausted. So a lot of people like to go for holiday. You go for holiday and you come back on Sunday night. Monday morning, you have to go to work. Oh, that's terrible. So it's happy, but then it follows by exhaustion. The happiness that you have, and it leads you to become more and more attached to it. So what kind of happiness are we thinking about? We say our life is not always full of happiness. But what in your mind, what do you mean by happiness? You said life is not always full of happiness. But what kind of happiness are you looking for? Do you know what kind of happiness are you looking for? This is a question that we need to think very carefully. If you do not know what kind of happiness are you looking for, then we may put in a lot of effort in chasing after something that we think that will give us happiness. But at the end, once we achieve that, we find that it's still not that happy. But you wasted your whole lifetime chasing after that. Say, for example, someone may say, if I become the prime minister of the country, I'll be the happiest person in the world. And after you got there, you got to that state, you realize that it is not as happy as what you thought. Some people say, I want an iPhone 6. I want to have an iPad. I want the newest technology. And that's why people line up in the middle of the night to buy iPhone 6. Is it iPhone 6 now? 6S. Okay. What's the newest now?
7 6S. Is coming.
7 is coming. Okay. Then we can see there's another queue lining in right from the middle of the night waiting for that. When the first person who got it, oh, you find that the reporter come and talk to you, everyone's happy. But how long does the happiness last? Before that, you may say, oh, if I'm the first one who got the iPhone 6S or iPhone 7, I'll be the happiest person because I'll be famous. We tend to think that way. But is that the real happiness? So, what actually are the happiness are we looking for? Why do we feel unhappy? That's probably something that we need to ask ourselves. Life isn't always full of happiness. But firstly, what's the happiness that we are looking for? If we don't even know, then how can you talk about happiness? So there's a question all of you have to think very carefully. What is your own definition for happiness? What kind of happiness are you chasing after? Very, very important. Maybe at this time you say, I want to have a good career. After my graduation, I want to get a job immediately. And I hope that everything runs smoothly and I make a lot of money. Do you think that will guarantee your happiness? Well, that's what most people think. And then I want to have a boyfriend or girlfriend who love me very much. And then I have want to have how many children? You want things to go according to your plan. But things, it's difficult for things to go according to our plan. So why is our life as such? What is the cause of all this frustration? Why? Have you ever thought of it? We all have this frustration in life, sense of uncertainty, wishes not fulfilled, things beyond control. But we just live our life day after day. Have anyone ever find out the reason behind? You're all very smart people in the university. Good question to think about, isn't it? Because if we are not clear on all these questions, like what's the happiness I'm looking for? What's my definition for happiness? What kind of future life am I looking for? Then you may be actually putting in a lot of effort which is not gearing towards that direction. So that's something that we need to be very careful about. Why are you not happy?
Things don't go as well as we want.
It doesn't go as well as you want. Okay, so there are a few things here that we have certain expectation on things. And how things is going to change, something that looks like it's beyond our control. And also, good state doesn't last forever. And as you say, do not know what is going to happen next. So in other words, in our mind, we do think that this state that I'm in is not going to be here forever. It keeps moving. But we do not know which direction is it moving to. And that gives us a sense of uncertainty. So deep in our heart, we do understand that everything is subject to change. Is that right? We do think that, we do sort of know that everything will change. And that's why we feel insecure. But then, in reality, we do have another expectation, that is, we hope that the good state can last as long as it can. Don't change. But then, we are so worried, when is it going to change? That's the problem with us. So, everything in the world is subject to change, and that's why you have certain expectation. Maybe you've made the expectation for a little while, but then it changed. Or you put in some effort, but then you're not sure whether you achieve what you want. So, happy state doesn't last forever. Every state doesn't last forever. And that makes us feel frustrated because our wisdom is not thorough enough in knowing what is the causes of our frustration. What are the effort that we need to put in to create the happiness we want? And at the same time, can this happiness last? So all this leads to a lot of stress in our life. So today when we talk about life is not full of happiness, yes, it is not full of happiness. But what kind of happiness that we're looking for? I think we should actually ask ourselves clearly. We probably want a happiness that doesn't lead to exhaustion, doesn't lead to more suffering. Right? You want a happiness that doesn't lead on to more ignorance, doesn't lead on to more stress. There are happiness that leads to more stress. For example, you buy one house and you want to buy another house, and you want a third house, you buy the house when you are happy. But then what follow you is all the installments. And then the insecurity about the house, about how you want to take care of the house, or whether there will be, when you go for holiday, who is going to take care of the house. So there are other issues that comes along. So this kind of happiness are not perfect happiness. So we want to look for some happiness which is actually give us ease, freedom, tranquility. Is that something that you're looking for? Not sure. So maybe you should think about it carefully. Okay? All right. So we come back to the question on that because of uncertainty, it leads to our frustration. And uncertainty develops because everything is subject to change. And so impermanence is what the Buddha have said, that everything in the world are subject to change. Good state doesn't last forever, bad state doesn't last forever as well. But we have to remember, impermanence is not a creation of the Buddha. The Buddha is just someone who has the same feeling like all of you. Life is not full of happiness. What's the cause of this unhappiness? Remember, when we went in the Chinese Dharma talk, we talked about that the prince left the palace or visited the country and saw old age, sickness, and death. And he saw how people get very, very frustrated, very sad over incident as such. But why? And so he left the palace in search of the truth. And he started to realize that, in fact, everything in the world is subject to change. They are always in the process of changing. Same thing with our body. It keeps changing. It is not... fixed and unchanged and never change. So it keeps changing. It's in a constant change, and the reason why it keeps changing is because it is a combination of many causes and conditions. So new causes and conditions can come in, and then it form another phenomena. So for example, you are all healthy, energetic now. By the end of the talk, you may feel tired, you want to go to sleep. Because why? Because although it looks like you're sitting here, but you're using up some of your energy. And so by 9 o'clock, 9:30, you feel like you feel hungry, you want to go to sleep. It's different. There's a lot of changes that's going on in ourselves. So the Buddha realized that because we did not understand this truth, we tend to attach to the state that we are in at this moment as fixed. For example, someone is young and healthy, and our body keeps changing. But then suddenly, so a lot of times we say, how come I suddenly become old? How come suddenly I have gray hair? Oh, suddenly I have wrinkles. Does it happen in a sudden? Your cell rise and fall, metabolism rise and fall every day, every second. You eat and you go to toilet every day. In fact, every moment we are changing. But usually we say, oh, this is teenager. So from 12 to 18, stay energetic. You don't even realize that you become older. We say we grow. When you come to an older age, then we say we age. Right? Growing and aging is the same thing. So, the Buddha realized that everything is subject to change. But because of our ignorance, we tend to attach to good state. And we are reluctant to accept the change of the good state. And therefore, we have suffering. We feel unhappy. Our mind reject the change. So is impermanence then the cause of the suffering? So we say living in this world is imperfect. This world is full of imperfection. everything is subject to change. So therefore, there's suffering. Impermanence, therefore, suffering. Is that right? So do you think it is because of impermanence that we have suffering? Is it because of impermanence that we have suffering? Yes? No? Yes or no? No? Who say yes? Impermanence cause suffering? Or impermanence lead to our suffering? No? Not sure. Well, impermanence is a universal law. It's just a universal law, as we say. It's not created by the Buddha. The Buddha is only the Buddha tame his mind, focus his mind, and figure out how the patterns on how the universe work. We, our body and mind, is just part of the phenomena in the world. It's subject to change as well. So, if impermanence causes suffering, and impermanence is a universal law, then bad luck then. We can't overcome the suffering then. So, of course, impermanence will cause our frustration. But let's think about it. Does all impermanence, all changes lead to suffering? Not all changes lead to suffering. Sometimes you're happy for the change. Sometimes you're unhappy for the change. Is that right? So can we just think a bit more in detail? Okay, changes happen. Recall some incident that you have encountered before. Under what kind of situation, when changes happen, you feel sad? Under what kind of situation, when changes happen, it doesn't affect you? Is there any incident that changes happen, but it doesn't disturb your mind? If you have expectation on the thing, then it's like it tied to your heart, it affects you. But if it's nothing related to you, you probably don't even care about it. Just like we say, earthquake happened far, far away in some country. You may say, oh, I feel sympathetic to them. And then you go back to your lecture, you don't care about it anymore. But if it happened in your house, then you feel sad. Or if, say for example, there's a strong wind and a tree falls down. If the tree falls down, oh, you say, oh, the wind is strong, the tree falls down. Then after that, you probably don't have much feeling about it. But if the tree falls down and hit on your new car, what will happen? You get frustrated. Is that right? So, same thing. Some changes has happened. The tree falls down, but one, it doesn't disturb you much. Another incident disturbs you more. So if impermanence is a cause of suffering, then under all kinds of under whatever kind of situation, as long as there's changes, it should cause suffering. Is that right? If impermanence is the cause of suffering. But why sometimes it causes suffering, sometimes it doesn't cause suffering. So in other words, impermanence is not necessarily the real cause of suffering. It is just a natural phenomena that everything is just like the flow water of water in the river. Sometimes you may admire the change, like sometimes you're waiting for the change to happen. Like you have a pot of flower and like you see the bud and you're just waiting for the flower to blossom. You just keep looking at it every day and hope the change can happen so that you can see the flower. See, sometimes impermanence brings happiness. And the flower blossom and your little brother pluck it away. Then you're going to get very upset. So if impermanence causes suffering is a universal truth, then under whatever kind of situation, it should cause suffering. But the reality is that sometimes it causes suffering, sometimes it doesn't cause suffering. So therefore, we cannot generalize and say that impermanence causes suffering. Do you agree? Okay, so now the next thing is that, so what is the real cause of our suffering? What makes us unhappy? Changes will happen all the time. That's a universal law. It's something that we can't change. Alright? So the universal law, basically everything subject to change. So we have to then identify. Now, the tree fall down, it's not hurting any of your things, you got no feeling. But it falls on your car, that's when you feel very upset. Because there's something there that you think belongs to you, and that it has been disturbed, and therefore it starts to touch your heart. Because you don't expect that to happen. You see, a lot of you say that because our expectation is not met. When we say with our expectation, that's that we think that there's this I have this expectation that inside here is Coca-Cola. When I open it, oh no. Then I feel upset. Is that right? So there's this I that expects something, and so that this thing has to be in this way. And we think of this thing as a fixed thing. And we also think of this as I want this thing which belongs to me to happen this way. So there's a lot of fixed entity that we are clinging on. We did not understand that, in fact, this I, who have such a strong expectation or such a lot of expectation, this I is a combination of so many causes and conditions. At this moment, maybe some of you have this experience before. In the morning, you tell your mom, tonight, I would like to eat pizza. Somehow, when you go to school, at school, you saw your friend eat Kentucky. And then you start to change your mind. So, no, I like Kentucky. And you go home, your mom buy pizza for you. I do not like it anymore. In the morning, you're thinking of something. But by the noontime, because some other causes and conditions come in, or because the weather changed, you feel like you want something cooling. And so you decided that your appetite also changed. Do you have this experience? So this I that we cling on so much is subject to a lot of changes, and it rely on the new conditions that come in, and we have a lot of changes in our mind, in our body. And this body and mind that we have right in the morning until now breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. The air that goes into your body is different. Your cell rise and fall. You eat your breakfast. You go eat your lunch. Eat your dinner. And you take shower. There's a lot of things that's going on in our body. Sometimes you feel hot, sometimes you feel cold. Now, if you're a fixed, unchangeable identity, you should always be the same all the time. But in fact, we are not. We keep changing. So the Buddha said, don't hold on to yourself so rigidly and think that it's a fixed, unchangeable entity. So if we can understand that we are a phenomena, which is a combination of many causes and conditions, always in the process of changing, and don't cling to ourselves so much, and that have so much self-expectation, reduce your self-centeredness, and also understand the external things that you're attaching to, they are all subject to change as well. Be a bit more flexible. The car is a combination of many causes and conditions as well. It is made of many things, and it is subject to deterioration as well. So understand that it is subject to change, and it is not as fixed as what we thought. So when changes happen, be a bit more happier, or be a bit more ready to accept the change, you'll find that you'll be happier. So this is what we meant by our ignorance, that we did not understand the things that we are attaching to. And so although in theory we all have this, as I said just then, we all subconsciously do have this feeling of insecurity that things will change, but in reality we attach. That is the real problem. And that's what we mean by ignorance, that we did not see the truth. If we see the truth of things, then we understand that everything just causes and conditions, and they keep changing. And so it's just like sometimes some of you may play with computer games, or you do some animation program and things like that. You find that you have to add in a lot of dots to make a picture. And when you start to change the dots, it form another picture. Is that right? Same thing with us. And that's why as you grow, your friends who haven't seen you for 5 years, oh, you have changed. It looks different. To you, every day you look at the mirror, you probably is taught you didn't change. But your friends said, you have changed. Why do we change? Why do we have the ability to change? Because we are a combination of causes and conditions. It's not fixed. If it's fixed, then you always look like that. That size never grow, never shrink, never grow taller or shorter. But why can you grow taller? There's rooms for changes. So because we did not understand that, we tend to attach to ourselves as it is, attach external thing as it is, and have expectation on this external thing from our self-perception. These external things, it should be like this, and it has to be fixed to be like this. But in fact, it is a combination of causes and conditions. It's always changing. And so because we are too rigid in attaching to the phenomena and do not allow changes to happen, but then changes happen in the way that beyond our expectation, that's when we feel frustrated. So, as we say, everything is a combination of many causes and conditions. So they form a certain phenomena. And we tend to cling on to this phenomena as one thing. But in fact, this phenomena, it depends on the causes and conditions that comes in. Depends on the causes and conditions that come in, it can form into different shape or different state, right? To us, because just now it was like this, so we tend to cling on to it to be like this. We didn't expect that it has to go that way. We did not realize that new causes and conditions has come in, and so therefore it has start to go that way. But because we still stay in the perception that it has to be like this. So when it starts to change in a different direction, a different shape, we thought, why it comes like this? It's out of our expectation. Our expectation is that it's like this, it should grow bigger and bigger in this shape. But then, because of the causes and conditions, which is different, the phenomena change to a state which is not as what we have expected. And we thought, why is it as such? It's because we stay in the past. We stay in the old state and thought that it has to stay like that all the time. But in fact, everything can change. So when we are reluctant to accept the change, that's when your frustration will happen. But if you understand that everything can change and you are able to follow the change, and make use of the new situation they are in, as you say, sometimes the change, the thought is bad, initially it's a bit of pain, but then it ends up to be good. Depends on how you adjust yourself positively and then adapt to the new situation and build from there. So initially you feel a bit bad, maybe because you thought this is tough, or this is painful, or this is a very obstacle. But then you say, okay, just take the challenge. And when you take the challenge, you start to become positive in doing whatever is needed, and you find that going this way is not too bad as well. In fact, it's actually better than that way. Right? So, if you are able to understand that everything can change, and the frustration that we have a lot of time is because we have an attachment to the certain expectation that we have. But the change has gone to a direction which is beyond what we have thought. And that's why we get very frustrated. Okay? So that's why we say is that impermanence is actually not the cause of suffering. Impermanence is just a universal law. The cause of suffering comes from our ignorance about the truth. And because of our ignorance about the truth, we start to have attachment. And that's when we have suffering and unhappiness. So, under situation as such, can we find happiness? Can we find happiness? So everything is impermanent, and then we have this ignorance. How can we find happiness? Can we find happiness? Yes, good. Right, so how can we find happiness? Accept the change. Okay. And at the same time, yes, accept the change is good, but sometimes people say, oh, then I just have to accept all changes that happen. Well, when you are more ready to accept changes, you don't lead yourself to negative thinking. And then secondly, when we talk about change does not necessarily mean that it has to change to be bad. It can change to be good as well. And at the same time, change also gives us hope. Because as we say, we have happy state, we have unhappy state. If no changes is going to happen, then we may have to, if we are in a bad state, then we're going to be bad state all the time. Then that's very sad. So impermanence is actually, it's just a neutral term, but people tend to think of impermanence as a negative, like a pessimistic term. But in fact, impermanence is just a fact. So change is probably a more neutral word. Everything is subject to change. So because it can be changed, it actually gives us hope. But how can we use change to create a better hope for ourselves? That's where the law of cause and effect has to come in. The law of causes and conditions and cause and effect has to come in. So the Buddha say everything is subject to change. That's a universal law. The Buddha did not create the law. The Buddha is just someone who tamed his mind and realized that this is how the universe works. And people, because of their ignorance, they attach to whatever they see in front of them and cling on to that state and have expectation on how they want this state to develop without putting in the right causes and conditions. And that's when the outcome is beyond their expectation, that's when they got upset. Right? So the Buddha say everything is subject to change. But in this flow of change, how does it going, which direction is it going to flow to? Does it flow in any direction it likes? Random? If it's random, then that's very difficult for us to work out what is going to be in the future as well. Right? So the Buddha tamed his mind, focused his mind, and he see very clearly the pattern on how the universe works. So everything is subject to change. In this flow of change, it flows according to certain principle. There's a principle that how it flows. It is not just random. So he says that if we put in the right causes and conditions, the wholesome causes and conditions, then it will flow towards a good direction. If you cultivated unwholesome causes and conditions, it will lead to suffering. So good doer will lead to happiness, bad doer will lead to suffering. There's this this is also a universal law. So the Buddha did not create this. It was at the time when he tamed his mind, at the time that he was attaining enlightenment, it was says that in the first part of the night, that were at the night, the day that when the Buddha was attaining enlightenment, the first part of the night, he start to see his own past life, that how he has practiced life after life, what kind of practices he has engaged into, until he comes to this life when he was a Prince Siddhartha. So he can see how he tried to practice, he tried to develop his body mind, how he tried to help others and engage into a lot of practice, and he paved the way until this life. And finally, he perfect himself in his wisdom, his compassion, and purity of mind, and he attained Buddhahood. So he start to see how his own journey of practice. The second half of the night, he start to see other people's past life. He start to see how there are people in the past lives, they do bad things, and in this life they have suffering. There are people in the past life do a lot of good deeds, and that's why in this life they are very lucky. And that's from there that he start to figure out the cause and effect. What are the actions and speech actions and thought which are wholesome, that we need to cultivate in order to lead ourselves to happiness? What are the unwholesome speech actions and thought that we should avoid so that we avoid suffering? So he start to see the teaching, the law of cause and effect. In the third part of the night, that's the dawn time, he see more clearly that everything, human beings are looking for happiness, and there's this cause and effect. But then human beings or sentient beings tend to attach to things as it is. They did not realize that everything's impermanent and arise due to causes and conditions. So there are a lot of causes and conditions that form certain phenomena. But because we all cannot understand this, we attach to the phenomena as it is and start to cling on to it and want it to be ours. And we cling on to ourselves as an I and develop very strong self-centeredness. So we become very self-protective, very self-defensive, very protective of about our belongings, and start to see other people as our rivalry. And so jealousy, arrogance, hatred, selfishness develops. And then we transform into unwholesome speech, actions, and thought, and lead ourselves to suffering. So this was what the Buddha realized at the dawn time, at the final, before when he attained perfect enlightenment. So by understanding that teaching of impermanence, that everything arises due to causes and conditions, and that in this flow of impermanence, it follows this principle of cause and effect. It gives us a method on how we can practice. So everything is changing. So we are at this state, and every day is passing by. So how do we want to create our future? So the Buddha say, wholesome causes lead to happiness, unwholesome causes lead to suffering. All right. So what we need to do is make sure we live in the present, try to be mindful of our speech, actions, and thought, cultivate wholesome speech, actions, and thought, so that we plant the seed, the causes and conditions that can lead to a happier future. And we have to avoid unwholesome speech, actions, and thought so that we don't lead ourselves to suffering. So what do we mean by wholesome speech, actions, and thought? Good deeds. Some of you say, oh, good deeds. Do good things. But what do you mean by good things? What do you mean by good things? What do you mean by bad things? You see? So there are all these definitions that we have to be careful. First, we say you have to go home and think about what is the definition for happiness. Second thing that you have to be very clear about is what is good thing, what is bad thing. We want to do good, to lead to happiness, but you have to make sure that you're really doing good things. So what is your definition for good and bad? What is your definition for good deeds and bad deeds? Your mom told you that? So we are all at university. I think all of your parents, when you were little, your parents tell you, do good, not to do bad. Edo, your father told you that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you ask him what is good and what is bad?
No.
No? So are you sure that what you are doing is good or what you are doing is not right? How do you make judgment on what is good and bad?
Personal experience.
Personal experience? Okay. So you have to try and see if there's a cause and effect come back, or oh, it's not good. That's a bit of a risk. If it's small, then it's okay. But if it's big experiment, then it can be very painful, right? Okay, very good. So, good deeds are deeds that doesn't bring harm to yourself and others. Any other definition? Yes, so that's part of the answer. Yes, so this is, it sounds like a simple question. But in fact, it's a very important question. Otherwise, we may say that we are learning the Buddha's teaching, we keep telling ourselves, you find that a lot of people tell their children or a lot of devotees, we need to do good deeds, we need to cultivate good deeds. What is good deeds? So, the Buddha's definition, well, in fact, there are a lot of philosophers who have definition for good and bad as well. Some tend to look at the outcome, that the outcome must benefit others, not to bring harm to others. as long as the outcome doesn't bring harm to others, it's a good deed. But then there are others who say, as long as I have a good heart, that's a good deed. So that's why you find that there are people who do good deed. They say, oh, I don't care how he's going to take it. I'm just doing this genuinely for my good heart. And they think that as long as I have a good heart, I'm doing this out of my own sincerity, that is a good deed. There are people who tend to think that way as well. Is that right? So, but Buddhism look at both perspectives. First, our mind, yes, when you want to do a good deed, it has to come from your sincerity. And more importantly, we want our mind to be as pure as we can. We do not want to harbor in ourselves selfish motive when we do a good deed. If you do a good deed with selfish motive, of, for example, you do a good deed because you want to earn more praise or you want reward from someone, that kind of good deed is not pure. You understand what I'm saying? All right. So, so we want to do a good deed, not harboring impure elements as such, like having sense of arrogance, sense of jealousy, sense of desire. As I say, sometimes you know that she's very, very generous. So when you give her small things, you know that she will return a big present to you. So we do a small gift to her and she will give us a lot. And so that's not a pure motive. And sometimes some people carry out a good deed out of arrogance, because maybe they are rich and they just want to show that they can do a good deed. So they do that as a way to promote themselves. So we have, I mean, you can see a lot of big company, they do some charity, but use that opportunity to advertise themselves. And also, sometimes people may do a good deed out of jealousy. Like, she did a good deed, and she's being praised, and everyone praised her, and you start to feel jealous. I want to do good deed as well. Just because of this person, like, sometimes you find that this happened at school as well. Like, when a student's going to help the teacher praise the students, and then another kid will come along and say, oh, Miss, I'll help you as well. Because they feel like they want to gain the praise. So that kind of help is not very genuine. Of course, we are ordinary person. We can't be perfectly pure, but we should try to minimize this. Because at the end of the day, we say it's the cause of suffering come from our self-attachment. So when we carry out a good deed, we want to use that opportunity to reduce our self-centeredness as well, rather than using the opportunity to develop our self-arrogance and self-ego. And then secondly, besides checking your mind, we want to also think carefully, how should we carry out this good deed so that the outcome benefit others? So the outcome should benefit others. If you are carrying out the good deed with sincerity, you find that you gain joy, you learn more about the Dharma, that is the reward that you gain, that's good enough. And so, benefiting yourself, benefiting others, that's alright. If you only benefit others, not benefiting yourself a lot, that's still fine. But if your good deed only benefit yourself and not others, that's not called a good deed. And if the good deed that you are doing doesn't benefit others, doesn't benefit yourself, then what's the point of doing that? Well, that shows that sometimes we're not skillful. Sometimes some people have good heart. They really want to do something. But they are not skillful. They don't think carefully. They don't plan properly. And also the approach that they use are not appropriate. So at the end, they hurt the other party. And at the end, they mess up everything. Doesn't benefit anyone. So at the end of the day, you can't call this a pure good deed as well. Not a perfect good deed. So Buddhism defines good and bad from these two perspectives. First, your mind. Check our mind. Try to be as pure, free from afflictions as you can. Secondly, just think carefully how you want to carry out the good deed so that it benefits others. So So when we try to create more happiness in our life, you find that in this flow of impermanence, if we can supply ourselves with more wholesome action, speech and thought, then we're going to create a better future for ourselves. So if we come back to the definition that we said just then, if you think about, you always harbor yourself a mind of benefiting others, a mind of giving others happiness, and make sure that you carry out the good deed that really help others and make other people happy, and you yourself don't attach to it, feel happy that everyone's happy and problem is solved, and that's it, that's good. And in that way, you find that you actually create a lot of good relationship with others. Your rapport with others will be good. At the same time, you're not arrogant. You use the opportunity, you improve yourself in your practice, because you don't expect any return. You are not having a strong desire for any rewards. You are not using the opportunity to show off yourself. You see that, you reduce affliction in yourself. You are modest. You like to share. You are generous. You rejoice with others' happiness. Your mind is more peaceful and tranquil. You don't create enemies. Can you see that you're actually paving a way to a more peaceful life? So that's why when we say that we want to create a better life for ourselves, we need to think of what kind of happiness we want to look at the end. Because we want to use the flow of impermanence so that we supply ourselves with the right causes and conditions according to the cause and effect to lead to the happiness we will want. So if, for example, if we want to have a happy life, say for example, we don't talk about what nirvana, enlightenment as yet, but if you talk about a happy life, where you have sufficiency in material life, okay? Material sufficiency, because at least I think money is not ultimate, but you do want to live in poverty, okay? And secondly, you want to have good friends and support, and that you don't live in fear. You want your life to be safe. And thirdly, you probably want to have a mind which is more composed, not a mind which is chaos, scattered, agitated all the time. Okay? Is that a happy life? Or not in poverty, have good friends, families, and not living in fear, is always full of confidence, and that the mind is composed, tranquil, and calm. Good? Not perfectly good, but at least, okay, so just say if that is the outcome we want to be. Okay, we hope that after you graduate, you want to look for a job, and then your life is stable in terms of monetary earning, is good to support your family, and your family is peaceful, and that you is safe, and you have a lot of good friendships, and so on. At the same time, your mind is tranquil, peaceful, and calm, and composed. Okay, what should we do to what should we cultivate in order to lead to a future as such? See, in the flow of impermanence, we supply the causes and conditions. So the Buddha say, if we do not want to live in poverty, we need to practice generosity. Practice giving. Why? Because when other people are in shortage, you can help others to relieve from the suffering. You free others from poverty. The cause and effect is that you yourself will not be in poverty. And the Buddha said, practicing generosity is like planting a seed in the field. You plant an apple in the ground, it grows into an apple tree, you're going to have a lot of apples. Although what you give is small, but as long as you give with a sincere heart, a heart of wishing others well and not thinking of return, your mind is unlimited, your return is unlimited. If you plant an apple tree, apple, you do a deed, and you're looking for reward, then you find that your return will be limited because your mind is not broad enough. So the Buddha said practicing generosity is like planting seeds in the field. So if we plant the seed in a good field, especially a field that, so we say the field of respect, that is like you plant a good seed in, you give donation, give support to the monastery, offerings to the Buddha, the triple gem, giving out of compassion, giving donation to the hospital, to the nursing home, to the schools, that it can help a lot of people. You find that whatever you give may be small, but because, for example, you give a donation to the school to build a new building for classrooms, and this classroom may last there for 60 years, 100 years. Your $20. Any students that gone past that building over that 100 years will create a good link with you. So your investment, so your donation of $20 will actually multiply a lot. And that's why we say practicing generosity is the best investment. It won't depreciate. And it's something that you can carry on to your future life. Whatever money you put into the bank in this life, it ends with this life. But the good deed that you cultivate, you plant the seed in the field of this, it goes on to the future life. That makes sure that you're not in poverty. So when we practice generosity, we can avoid ourselves to make sure that we have sufficiency in the future life. We can also practice generosity in sharing good knowledge with others, giving comfort and encouragement to others. So in this way, you find that when you give comfort and encouragement to others, when there are people in need, you create a lot of good friendship. And at the same time, if you share knowledge with others, you make yourself wiser as well. And secondly, we need to practice upholding the precepts, good discipline. So if we uphold good discipline, make sure we don't harm others, don't kill, don't steal, not to do things which is not right, not harming others, then you find that you are always, you're not doing anything wrong, no one is going to take revenge on you, you will be safe. And because you're upholding the precepts, you always have this mind of making sure that your action, speech and thoughts doesn't hurt others, your relationship with others will be good as well. And then thirdly, we want to practice some meditation. Practice some meditation. Always collect our mind, settle our mind, so that we don't become too emotional, we don't be too scattered. And so those cultivation will lead to a mind which is more composed, more focused, not easily agitated. So you can see that you need to know, that's why I say you need to go home and think about what kind of happy life you want in the future. Not necessarily talking about liberation, but what kind of future life you're thinking of after your university, or what kind of future life or what kind of life you want to have for the next part of this present life. A lot of time we say is that whatever we have cultivated in the past life lead to our present, right? So in the present 10 or 20 years, probably a lot can still be influenced by our past. But then when you come to age 30 and above, a lot of them are influenced by what you have done in your present life. You actually plant those seed yourself. So it's time for you to think very carefully what kind of life you want to have. And you put in the right causes and conditions to lead to those kind of life. Okay, so impermanence means change, but it also brings us hope. So impermanence is actually not a bad thing at all. Okay, there's a saying in the sutra, I'm not sure you heard before, we say impermanence brings about suffering, suffering implies non-self. This is a saying in the Agama Sutra. So just now we did say, impermanence is not the cause of suffering, but it does bring, make us feel suffer. And so the sutra say, this suffering implies that we are non-self. I'm not sure whether it makes sense to you. So it says impermanence. Little suffering. And the reason why we feel that we feel suffering basically implies that we are non-self. So what do we mean by non-self here? When we talk about self, just now we say that we tend to cling on to ourself as it is, as an I. Okay? So it means that it's fixed. It's a fixed entity. It is independent. It doesn't rely on other causes and conditions. And also, it is self-mastery. That means you have full control of yourself. Do we have that characteristic? Are we fixed? We are not fixed. Are we just a piece of things without any other causes and conditions? If we are a piece of things, we do not need to eat anything. Right? There's no room for anything to go in. And are we self-mastery? Can you control yourself? We can slowly train ourselves, but you find that it's difficult. We try to train to master our mind, it's already so difficult. Physical body that we have subject to deterioration. You see, I like to stay at the age of 12. I do not go to university. I want to stay in high school all the time. Can you? You can't. So, we are not self-mastery. So in other words, we are not actually a fixed I as what we thought. So in Buddhism, we use a negation method to say non-self. It means that it doesn't have this characteristic. This I that we have doesn't have this characteristic. So it's called non-self. So do not think of non-self means that the self disappear. It just means that we do not have the characteristic of a fixed self. Does that make sense? Okay. So it says impermanence leads to suffering. That's what we all think. Impermanence leads to suffering. But then he says the reason why we feel suffer, it basically says that we are not self-mastery. Because if you are the master of yourself and you are fixed independent entity, we do not rely on anything, then whatever changes happen, you are still you. Nothing is going to happen. If you are a happy person, you're happy forever. Why do you need to feel unhappy? So it says that impermanence leads to this feeling of suffering. That we have this feeling of suffering basically implies that we are not self. To you, does it make sense to you? Some of you say yes, some of you say no. Okay, think about it. But this is a saying in the Agama Sutra. Okay, so in other words, we have touched on basically two very important things. One is that it is not impermanence that lead to suffering; it is our attachment and ignorance that lead to is the culprit of our unhappiness. And then the other thing is that the impermanence is not necessarily pessimistic. Impermanence basically brings us hope that it can change. And while we try to create the change, we have to remember the teaching of cause and effect, and the teaching of causes and conditions. So in that way, we can slowly create a better future for ourselves. Okay? So do you want to keep the 15 minutes for question and answer?
There's two questions.
Let's have a look. Okay, so there's one question that says that can everything be classified as good or bad, or there seems to be things that are both good and bad? Well, I neither good nor bad. So how do we classify these things? Can you think of any example? Yes?
I think there are examples where you can't really classify something as good and bad. For example, let's say you're an engineer and there are two boats that are sinking, or two ships. One ship has 200 people and one ship has 300 people. You can save only one of the ships. So like, either way, people are going to die, so you can't really choose which one's better or not. But I think a lot of people would choose the ship with more people, but then if you change the question to like, if like, let's say your parents were on the ship with 200 people, then would you save the ship with 200 people, or would you save the one with 300 people? And
yep.
Either way, you can't really like decide which one's more righteous and which one's more just and which one's better and such.
Yeah, I think it's in that scenario, we can still use the wholesomeness and unwholesomeness definition to sort of analyze. Although we can't make a perfect choice in the sense that you save all the 500. So between or among the causes and conditions that we have, say for example, you have a ship that's 200 people, a ship that's 300 people, but according to the causes and conditions at that time, maybe the 300 people's boat is a bit further away, and by the time you try to save that ship, maybe you still can't do much about saving all the 300 people. Whereas the 200 people's one could be just nearby, and you find that it's easier to have a quicker, because what you have given us is only the 200 and 300 people, but then there are other causes and conditions surrounding that. Like for example, the 300 people's one is too difficult, the way that it got, it is sinking. You need to, by the time you get more help to come around to save that boat, it takes a lot of time, and where else the 200 people's one may be easier to save and that the resources are already there. So you probably have to take into consideration those things as well. Not just say which boat has got more people. Yeah. And then the other one is that your parents is in one of the boat. And so which boat should you be saving? Now, so if we use the definition of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, then because I got someone who is related to me in the boat, and that's why I want to save this boat first. There's already a selfish motive there. Not saying that saving your mom is a selfish motive, but that mind of equality, of that all lives are important, become, you find that that's when your eyes start to come in. So if a person who just basically try to make a judgment on which boat is the fastest that I can save and that can benefit the most, then you just, regardless of who are inside there, then maybe you will be making a judgment which is a bit more neutral. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So there are many causes and conditions that we tend to sometimes neglect, especially when we have our related person in a certain disaster. Then we just want people to go and help that area with this, and not to go to the other area where disasters is happening as well. Yeah. So that's when how pure is our mind, whether our mind is in a state of equanimity. Of course, it's difficult. As an ordinary person, this is very difficult. But I suppose in situation as such, we just have to take into consideration all causes and conditions that's available and make the best choice out of all these choices that we have based on the definition of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. It may not be the perfect choice, but it's like among these choice, this is, and using the knowledge that we have, this is probably the best one that we can make. And of course, there are actions, they are neutral, like we say, they are wholesome karma, unwholesome karma, they are neutral karma, of course, like you blink your eyes. It's like, this is just neutral things, right? So there are also some actions that's just basically neutral that you do out of no intention at all, and it's just a very natural response of your body in doing certain things, and that those are probably neutral. And that's why when we talk about karma, we say that there are wholesome karma, there are unwholesome karma, there are also neutral karma. I think that's where these questions, if you talk about there are things which are not really bad, good and bad, but it's an action. So, and that's why sometimes our definition for karma, we say it's basically an intentional action that you think carefully and you take make action. So that's the first question. And the second question is, say, does Buddhism have any views on God? So in Buddhism, we talk about the six realms, cycle of life and death. So we do talk about heaven, and so there are gods in the heaven. But in Buddhism, so Buddhism do agree that they are gods. In order to be reborn to heaven, someone needs to do good deeds as well. So, but then gods are not the goal in learning the Buddha's teaching. In learning the Buddha's teaching, we hope to develop the wisdom to attain realization like the Buddha. Gods is still within the cycle of life and death. It's just that they're in the heaven, their life is more comfortable, more enjoyable. But then they are still sentient beings who have afflictions. And so once they enjoy whatever is in the heaven, after they exhaust the good karma that they have, they may fall back to human being or animal realms, depends on what action they have done in the past. So that's why in Buddhism, we do respect that they are gods, but then that's not our goal. Okay. Any other questions?
Sorry, what do you mean by it's not our goal?
Our goal, that means our purpose in learning the Buddha's teaching, is to realize the truth and free ourselves from afflictions and free ourselves from attachment and realize a state of tranquility and ease. So rather than attaining, so that we want. So our aim is not to be reborn in the heaven. Yeah, our aim is to attain enlightenment.
So if you're good in your life now, would you be reborn as something better?
If we do good in this life, then of course the future life will be better. So as long as we still have attachment to ourselves, life after life, we can become better and better. But it's, as long as we still attach to ourselves, we still go around the cycle of life and death, but maybe with more comfortable life, more enjoyable life, depends on what action you have done. Yeah.
But then isn't that sort of a selfish thought? Like, you know how you were talking about good and bad deeds?
Yep.
So if you're only doing good things in your life now, so you're bad in your next life, isn't that sort of selfish?
Yes, so if that's why we say when we do a good deed, we try not to harbour in our thought just for our own good life, the sake of our good life. But we do a good deed because we want to help others to be free from suffering. And it's the cause and effect just come by itself. So that's why if some people just do a good deed for the sake of they themselves have a better good life, then that's quite selfish. And that's why they will have a good life, but there's limitation. But if your mind, that's why I say, if your mind is boundless, you just wish everyone well, you'll find that the cause and effect will actually be the good effect will actually be unlimited. But this is not something that we keep calculating and try to say I'm doing this to accumulate karmic point for myself. But it should be the compassion. So because at the end of the day, what we want to develop is like to learn from the Buddha, his wisdom, his compassion, without thinking of yourself. And it is by having compassion to others, free yourself from your selfishness, and develop your wisdom that we can finally attain peace and ease. And that's why if people keep cultivating good deeds, just thinking of they want to have a future life, a good future life, they will still be within the cycle of life and death because of this attachment to this I, attachment to the merits. Yeah. Any other questions?
Not really related, but just something that I've got to ask, I'm not too sure how to reply. So for example, from a Buddhism point of view, just take, for example, like abortion, right? Abortion is wrong because it involves killing of a life. But is it absolute? So are there instances in which it's acceptable from a Buddhism point of view?
Well, from Buddhism point of view, so abortion is killing. Is it exception? It's very difficult to say, right? So, like, say for example, some young girl is being raped, and then they are pregnant, and they want to have abortion. So this will definitely be a killing. And so you may say, at that time, you may feel, oh, for the sake of this young girl, for her future, it's better to abort the baby. But then, for this young girl, we do not know the impact on her throughout her life. That sometimes, after she grown up, she will still remember that she has killed a life before. And that will be a strong mental impact on herself. Yeah. So, if we can avoid, best to avoid, yeah. So, because after all, it is alive, and that, yeah, it's just there's no exception. Of course, as we say, in the world that we're living in, it's imperfect. Sometimes you just have to make the best choice out of the causes and conditions that we have. But a lot of time we make judgment based on the adults. The situation the adult's in, the embryo has got no say. The embryo love its life as well, isn't it? Because the embryo is already a living thing, and all living beings love their life. But when we make judgment, we tend to think of form. We feel sympathetic to the adults because we can see the suffering this person is in. But then this embryo will have to say as well. He or she can't say anything. So that's not very fair as well. So we just have to have this feeling, understand that all living things love their life. And if we can't avoid killing, we have to avoid. Any other questions? No? Okay, thank you.